Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I'm stunned because there's pizza here, so I never get to do this on a Wednesday.
That's because you're not sitting in your basement.
I'm stunned because you're here on a Wednesday.
I know. Well, you know, it's our last day of the week before the Christmas holiday. I figured I'd come in and see you. How are you, Eric?
You didn't need to wear the Santa suit, though, John.
I know. It was a little bit over the top, isn't it? Sorry.
Doing all right. How about you?
Eric, excellent. Get off his lap.
Now,
what is his problem?
I got abused for the last 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah.
They abused you? What did they do to you?
Fight back, you wuss.
That's fine.
Wow. They abused you? I would report that to your superior officers.
That,
you know?
His superior officer was on the radio with him.
So is the officer
technically,
abusing
no,
you?
But...
I know. It makes for a better joke, Doc. Roll with it.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. Welcome inside the playbook for a Wednesday. And as we suggested yesterday, we were kind of cramming 3 shows into 2 this week since those that will be celebrating the Christmas holiday will have tomorrow off. And then we'll be back for a couple of days next week before the New Year's holiday as well. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. And who do we say was coming up?
I'm Gene Frenette.
Thank you. Gene Frenette.
Florida Times Union.
From the Florida Times Union. I am
Scribe.
So scatterbrained today. My apologies. I got to get it together. Here's the 2:30, and then we're going to do some locker room stuff, and we want to hear from folks today.
Deadly locker room.
Yeah, is it really?
Today it was. Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
You want to start out with the You want to start out with the report today? Then the
practice
report.
Practice, yeah.
Sure, and we'll kind of lead into that because
sure.
That's kind of lead into what I want to talk about today.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we were out on the game field in the Gillette Stadium Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Shells and sweats, as has been the norm for about the last. The second half of the season, pretty much. They're not going with the full pads, heavy hitting, really, anymore during the week because late in the season, can't afford to do that.
Not a surprise.
You know?
Yeah.
Typical Wednesday absentees, Randy Moss, most likely not injury-related. Tom Brady seems to, the last few weeks, have taken the Randy Moss route and skipped the Wednesday practice. Tully Bantekane, though, surprisingly. Not out there at the start.
Wow.
So don't know what that issue is.
Everything's okay. He's the one that actually had a really good
game
last week.
Right. Yeah. And Mike Wright, too. Let's not overlook that. I mean, not maybe statistically like Tully did, but Mike Wright had a great game. Those are the only 3 absentees. Vince Wilfork, Ty Warren back out on the field.
That's good news.
Very good news. And that's pretty much the big news of the practice. We actually got to watch more than stretching today, which was another bonus. Which, not a whole lot much more, but you know.
Well,
lately it's just been stretching and then we're out of there.
Yeah,
so.
Nothing wrong with that.
We'll take it.
All right. Part of what I wanted to kind of get into today, though, is as we'll take a look at the Jags coming up with Gene Frenette in a little bit here, but part of what I wanted to get into today was some of the, you know, Tom Brady talked about in his press conference that I think is actually sort of appropriate, and that is trying to find an identity for this team. He mentioned that he didn't really think, and I'm paraphrasing obviously here, but he mentioned that he didn't really think this team had an identity yet, that it was still forming. And obviously we've only got 2 weeks left in the regular season for there to be an identity.
Yeah, kind of late for that.
Yeah. So what I wanted to ask fans today is, how do you identify the Patriots? If you can describe the Patriots of 2009 in, say, 2 or 3 words tops, somewhere in that vicinity, what is the Patriots' identity to you? Because if Tom's having trouble coming up with it, the team seems to fundamentally be having some trouble coming up with it because they don't really yet know who they are. And a lot of that, admittedly, I don't think is directly their fault because they're in a transitional stage coaching staff-wise. I think we've seen that this year.
Yep.
They're in a transitional stage player-wise. We've seen that. So, you know, trying to go from older to younger. And we're even in a transitional stage upper management-wise, you know, with, Scott Pioli having left and Floyd Reese and Nick Caserio kind of, you know, tandem teaming the duties. So we're in transitional phases all the way around in this franchise. So when you're looking for an identity on this team, what is it in your estimation? How do you define the Patriots of 2009? Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach us. And, of course, if you'd like to call, 508-543-7482.
And I think that question is one that we sort of started answering a week or two ago on the show.
Yeah, but we never really...
I think the consensus we came to at the time was their identity is that they're a team without an identity.
Yeah.
And that you don't really know what you're getting each week.
Right.
And each week is a dogfight. They could either be the team that puts up 59 against the Titans in October, or they could be the team that that falls flat against Miami in the late stages of the game. It's you really don't know what you're getting with this team. And the only good news is that it's December, and they typically play well this time of year, which they have. Really, the Miami game at the beginning of the month was sort of an aberration.
We kind of have that to hang our hats on a little bit anyway. I mean, the fact that they have at least some history.
And so far they've come through this month.
Yeah.
They have one more game this weekend here, and then the following week it's technically January, but it's the end of the regular season, which is when they typically get things together. And, you know, the last two games against Carolina and Buffalo, they haven't been pretty, John, but they've done what they needed to do, and they've done what they hadn't been able to do previously, which was, I think, at the end of games, they did just enough to put together a win. And at this time of year, especially in the playoffs, it doesn't matter how pretty the win is all that matters. And I think that's the kind of team that they've become. They've just become an ugly win team. And that's fine if that's all they can be, and they continue to do that. They could make a run in the playoffs.
Do we sort of compare this team, though, in that sense to other Patriots teams in recent vintage? You know, say 2001, 2002?
Unfortunately, it's probably more like 2002, the year they didn't make
the playoffs. Yeah.
But because they don't have as many talented playmakers as they did on those teams back then. Even the year they missed the playoffs, they had... You know, they had pretty good talent on the team. And then obviously in 03 and 04, they had a ton of playmakers. But it's – if you're going to compare them to that era, that part of the decade, I'd say this is more like the 02 team. However, looking back at the recent history, I think this playoffs has the potential to be like the 06 playoffs where they – that was the year they went in, Deion Branch situation. They didn't have any receivers, and they still made it to the AFC Championship game. And you kind of each week you kept thinking, well, they're going to lose this week. Well, they're going to lose this week.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden they're in the AFC Championship game. They've got a 21-3 lead on the road at Indy, and you're thinking, wow, they're going to go to the Super Bowl and win it with this bunch of guys on offense. I think this year has the potential to be the same kind of thing, where if they get into the playoffs and win that first game on, you know, at home – you hope. I could see them making a little bit of a run, maybe even getting as far as the AFC Championship game again. And then
really, you could actually see that.
I think it's, but like I said, I think it's like 06 where they would have to knock off. Like they went to San Diego that year and beat a San Diego team that everybody thought was going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, San Diego had made the Super Bowl parade plans,
sure,
and announced them that week and all that nonsense. And New England had no business going there and winning that game. But they were a tough, ugly win team, and they got it done. So I think the potential exists, and the playoffs could end up falling in line that way. They could end up hosting the Jets if things worked out. They could end up hosting the Jets in the wild card weekend, as they did back then. They could end up going to San Diego in the divisional round, as they did back then. And if they make it past that, they could end up going back to Indy for the AFC Championship game like they did back then.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well,
and I still don't think that they're they're not a great team. They're not like the early part of this decade teams. They're not the kind of team that you have the confidence in every week that they're going to go out and blow out the team, their opponent. But if they can keep doing what they've done the last few weeks, which is not play perfect, but when it counted, they made the plays they needed to make just enough plays. Like, for instance, against Buffalo, the onside kick, granted, ridiculously stupid move by rookie Aaron Maven to go offside. You're the closest guy to the kicker, and you're a yard ahead of them.
How can you be a yard ahead?
I mean, it's not like you're the guy at the end who's expecting to get the ball, so maybe you're a little anxious. Right. You're the guy right next to the kicker. The ball's not going to you. Stay behind the kicker. You know, how do you do that? But, again, the Patriots got the ball back. They needed the third down to keep the drive going so that they could kneel on the ball. They got it. You know, and a few weeks ago, they might not have been able to do that. So they've done just enough, and granted, they've been against two pretty bad teams, but if they can continue that, if they can gain a little bit of confidence going forward, you know, they're going to be playing the same type of teams the next 2 weeks in Jacksonville and Houston. They're teams that are on the cusp, some weeks they look great, some weeks they don't. They got to get through that stretch. Once they get in the playoffs, anything's possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I honestly, I'm a little surprised by your reaction, only because it sounds like it's still got a little bit more of a positive spin to it, and I think you and I were both kind of lamenting the fact that the season was over about a week ago.
I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl.
No, I'm just saying, but I mean, you know, I think there is some reason to think that, you know, and here's what I kind of talked a little about yesterday was the fact that, you know, even though, you know, this team played very ugly on Sunday, they did just enough to win. There was probably a lot of that ugliness scripted into that game plan. They needed to play it closer to the vest because they didn't have some key guys, and they thought that this was their best way to beat Buffalo and just kind of move on, survive in advance at this stage of the game, right? Exactly. And I really believe that's why, a large reason why Sunday's game against Buffalo was so lackluster, for lack of a better phrase.
Uh-huh. Yep.
This having been said, they're figuring out ways to win. So they're becoming creative again. And so I'm thinking that this creativity could also be put into use within the next couple of weeks. Should they win this game on Sunday against Jacksonville, then, you know, obviously they're in the playoffs. They're going to be a division champ. If there's no shot at getting the two seed, then I certainly, and I think most everybody rightfully, would expect this team to rest a number of players for the final game against Houston, and that one would probably be a mail-in situation. Now,
I kind of disagree, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we will know by Sunday, though, because it really kind of hinges on the San Diego at Tennessee game on Christmas night. Because if Tennessee can win and keep the Patriots in play for the potential to play for that second spot again, then you have to probably ensure yourself a chance to go for it. I mean, that's my thinking here.
It's not bad thinking at all. The only reason I disagree is I don't think this team can afford to rest those guys at this point. I think, as Brady said,
so they got to play through it.
If they're a team searching for an identity, they can't afford to take a week off.
Okay, I'll buy that to an extent, but you know, when you have guys like, well, Fred Taylor comes to mind, and now obviously last week's two omissions defensively, and Will Fork and Warren come to mind. I mean, okay, maybe you throw them in there for a few snaps, but really, why? If you can't improve your lot in life, if you're, you know, frankly, and if you look at it from a strategic point of view, I believe, and I think Mike Reese even wrote about this today on ESPN Boston, I believe, and I said this yesterday as well, that this team is probably better off going in as the 4 seed because it sets them up for a potential second-round game against Indianapolis, which I think right now is a more winnable game, believe it or not, than San Diego. And it allows you to build some momentum up to going to San Diego, which you will desperately need. So I kind of like the way that lays out. So whether you're 3 or 4, that doesn't mean squat. It doesn't mean a thing.
No, yeah, I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying it. One of the things we've heard, the lament we've heard all season from players on both sides of the ball, is communication, being on the same page, you know, guys doing their job, knowing their assignments. If you take a week off at this critical time of the year, you lose something.
Okay.
I think. And teams like the Colts have proven that out. They've notoriously, well, under Dungy at least, they were notorious for taking weeks off at the end once they secured a spot. And guess how many Super Bowls they've won this decade? One.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not done them a damn bit of good to rest their guys at the end of the year. I think this is the time when you need to keep that edge. You need to make sure you stay sharp. You can't afford to gain a few pounds and sit back and relax. You need to stay sharp. And especially if you're not sharp yet, you need to get sharp in time. And you might as well take these opportunities. Maybe they don't play the whole game, John, Okay? But they need to at least get in there and get some action. They need to stay they need to get to the top of their game.
Okay.
I think.
Well,
they're not a team with enough playmakers that they
can
just sit back.
I just don't happen to think that Bill Belichick is going to think like that. My thought is that they probably, if they feel like they still need to go out and put up a representative effort against Houston, my thought is they may rest guys in waves. You know, they may decide, okay, this week so-and-so is going to be inactive and not going to play, and then the next week against Houston, another two or three different guys that could use the rest will also be inactive and not play. Rather than sit all six or eight guys that could use the time off down for one game and throw Tom Brady in this mix too, because he's also part of the walking wounded here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then my guess is that maybe Tom only plays, you know, if they can win this game, then maybe he only plays a quarter. Maybe it's like a preseason game, you know, where he'll play a series, a quarter, and then they turn it over to Brian Hoyer and, you know, hey, we mail it in and we get ready for the playoffs.
You know, if they were a 12, 13, 14 win team, I might agree with that a little bit more, but I really find it hard to think that this team can afford to do that.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you philosophically. I'm going on track record here. I'm going on what this team has done in the past. And to me, this is a slam dunk. This team is going to rest guys, period. If they cannot prove their lot playoff-wise. Now, if the two seed is still in play, all bets are off. I think they go for it. I do. I believe that strongly.
Of course, you need the extra week
off. You could use the extra week off.
A legitimate week off.
And you get to stay. And plus, you have a chance to host two games. Let's not forget that.
And you could end up hosting the AFC Championship game.
Right. Precisely. That's what I mean, hosting two games.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you play for that opportunity? Granted, as Russell Baxter pointed out so well yesterday, in recent years, you know, the team's home field advantage aren't always the ones that reach the Super Bowl. So let's just keep that in mind. But you'd still rather have that opportunity if you had a choice in the matter.
Oh, sure.
And this team could have a choice. Now, again, the game that it really should interest Patriots fans as much as any game this weekend other than their own is San Diego at Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely.
Christmas night.
Sure.
Friday night. It's on NFL Network.
Yep.
If Tennessee wins, not only do the Titans stay in play themselves for one of the more remarkable turnarounds of an entire season.
San Diego drops down a notch.
San Diego comes back a notch.
Closer to New England.
That's exactly right.
And the other game, obviously, is Cincinnati's. I mean, they had a tough loss at San Diego last week. I really thought they were going to win that game.
Yeah.
But the fact that they didn't helps out New England.
Sure it does.
And like you said, if San Diego on Christmas night having to fly, you know, almost halfway across the country, more than halfway across the country,
sure,
to have to play on a holiday night, a shorter week, are they really going to be up for it? I think they will, because I think they're a better team.
I think they are too, but I certainly give Tennessee a puncher's chance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've won 7 out of 8 games.
Yeah.
You can make an argument that you've got the two hottest teams in the entire NFL, short of Indianapolis, going against each other on Friday, because the Chargers have won 9 in a row, and the Titans have won 7 of 8.
They have, and this is going to sound, you know, homerish, but I really don't think the Colts are as good a 14-0 team as
I don't think they are either.
Think
I don't think
are.
That's homerish. I think it's a good observation. I think that I think we all feel like, given our druthers, we'd druther have the Patriots face the Colts than the Chargers in the playoffs. That was my question yesterday, was which team are you scared of the most in the playoffs? Nobody said the Colts. Not one respondent said the Colts.
I'm not surprised, because at least you have a little bit of knowledge of this year's Colts. You
Correct.
Played them. You had the lead.
Correct.
Should have won the game.
Correct.
Should have, no question, won
Correct.
That game. So you have confidence that you can go back and do it again, even if it's over there.
In case you're interested,
it was
the Chargers number one. Believe it or not, after that, it was the Ravens and then the Steelers.
Cincinnati wasn't in that?
Nope.
Yeah, I can see why those other two, because they're ugly teams.
Yeah. And plus, you haven't played the Steelers this year. I mean, you don't have an intimate knowledge. you know, of the other teams.
But I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
I don't think they are either. So, you know, I don't know that they'll ever be an entity. But those are the three teams that got, you know, the votes yesterday in terms of what team scares you the most in the AFC.
How exciting, though. 6 teams, 7-7 on the bubble.
It's amazing.
This is great. I mean, the NFL loves this.
The
stuff.
Chances are the playoff scenarios are infinitesimal. I mean,
on the AFC side.
Yeah, on the
NFC side, it's pretty much
it's a
slam
dunk. Right. I mean, the Giants are hanging on by a thread, and, you know, the Cowboys are holding on to a last spot, and, you know, it's
Cowboys could still win the division, though.
Yeah, they could. There's a chance.
I don't think they will. I think the Eagles will win.
I agree with that, but
I think the Cowboys will make the
chance.
Playoffs.
I do. I think the last win was everything for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I mean, when they beat the Saints, that put them solidly in play.
Sure.
And they needed to do that. So the Cowboys came up with a key win. Patriots still need a key win. They could get one this weekend, even though it's a home game, because this is a playoff caliber club.
Well, pretty good club that they're playing. I think they realize that, too. I think the very few guys who talked in the locker room today, it got to the very end before anybody even decided to talk at all. It almost had the feel of a media boycott for a while there, and then
so we're battening down the hatches now.
It kind of felt that way. Yeah, we had a bunch of guys coming
early against them
and declined interviews, and then finally one guy, Dan Cope in the center, got it started, and then Welker, Jarvis Green at the very end,
right,
gave us a couple of minutes, but everybody else said no thanks, no, I'm all set. I think they realize how important this game is.
Time for talking's over.
Yeah, and just that. I mean, after all they've been through this year, all the criticism they've taken, especially recently, the bad way that they've lost games this year, the fact that they should be a better record than they are, the fact that they're not, they can still win the division. They can still guarantee themselves a home game, at least in the first weekend. There's still an outside chance they could get a week off.
Sure.
I think they realize that, and I think they're going to play well enough against a team that I still don't have a handle on, this Jaguars team.
I don't either.
Obviously, at 7-7, that's a team you don't get a handle on, a team that's 500. But they're a very talented team, but I don't think they're a very good team as far as one cohesive unit, which is why they're 7-7. So I think they'll get the job done this week. I think next week is going to be interesting because, like you said, if things are wrapped up, who knows what will happen. But my prediction of 11-5 is still in play, and I'll stick with it.
Right, and I think that was it. we both kind of went right around 11-5. I think at the start of the season, I think I said there was an outside shot at 12-4, but
yeah.
I thought 11-5 was likely, and so that's still in play. You know, I think they've taken a little bit different route than I originally imagined they
certainly
would take
did.
To get there, but
certainly did.
Nevertheless, 11-5 definitely in play.
So it's safe to say that Eric is not as far off the ship as Fred makes it out to be.
What does Fred think? You're way off the ship here.
Because I've said, and I wrote the commentary thinking that the dynasty is at its end and they're transitioning to another era in the franchise's history, which I still think is the case.
Sure it is.
And
I think that's pretty obvious,
Is it possible that they could make a run and win the Super Bowl? Yes. Is it probable? No. That's how I feel.
And so they were hammering you for not being a homer?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. For saying that I jumped ship and I lost it
a long time. This is why
I'm just a realist. That's all.
This is why we have this program.
He tells it like it is.
That's right.
Not wrong.
It's not wrong.
Just saying.
This is why this is why Patriots Playbook exists on Patriots.com
to
radio.
Counterbalance
PFW homers. That's exactly right.
Inside the playbook, we don't do that.
No, we don't do that inside the playbook.
Or outside the playbook, either.
Either way. We don't do it here.
Page 5, maybe. But in the heart of the playbook, not so much.
I like that. That's good. We should copyright that or something. You know, that's good. It's in the playbook. That's right.
A little TM.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's good. And, you know, nothing wrong with, you know, covering the team and trying to pull for the team because it makes our job's a lot easier when this team is winning and everybody is, you know, all, you know, happy about it.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, you know.
And we reap the benefits. We get to go to
playoff
games
Super
Bowls.
Well, some of us do. Some of us don't.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Shouldn't have said that.
Stop whining.
Look at that. Yeah, this team makes the Super Bowl this year and I still won't go. Okay? So that's just the way it is. I've learned to accept my fate. Yeah, see,
I'll take you instead of Andy. How's that?
I would love that, by the way. Be happy to come do his job for a week.
You could go in my stead.
What would I have to do?
Go in Doc's place.
What would I have
to do anyway?
Yeah, you could definitely go in my place. I'd be fine staying here, believe me.
I would love to do it just once.
You've never seen any Super Bowl?
No.
In person?
No. That's the one of the events that, I mean, I've been with this team.
You've covered a lot of things.
I've covered a lot of things. I've been to World Series games, NBA championship. I have never done a Super Bowl.
College hoops.
I obviously done many playoff games.
College football.
AFC championships.
Yeah.
But an NFC championship even.
Oh,
but,
really?
Back when the Cowboys won it, back in the late 70s, early 80s. But I was there as a fan. I wasn't covering
it. Which one?
I want to say it was... When was that? 77?
Who'd they play?
1978.
69. It was, I don't even remember what the game was. It was the one year that they played Denver in the Super Bowl in 78.
Yeah.
The NFC Championship game was against Minnesota? I don't remember.
I think we just need to make the push to Fred that, you know, if PFW in Progress reports live from the Super Bowl, that
Patriots playbook.
Patriots playbook. You got to be inside the playbook at the Super Bowl.
That's right. You know, well, it took Fred a while to realize that, you know, this show is worthy of a podcast. You remember that a couple of years ago?
Yeah, we had the poll.
Yeah.
We had a tote board of how many people said they would download it.
And we needed, what was it, like 50 to 100 people just to come on and say they would download the podcast. And we got that like in the second or third day or whatever it was. So, yeah. So I think we just probably have to convince Fred that, you know, we should probably start that letter writing campaign now.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Minnesota Vikings?
Maybe that's what it took. Yes, Minnesota.
23-6?
That's the one. See, it's been so long. I was a freshman in college, so you'll understand that my brain was probably half learning about stuff and the other half was alcohol.
So you drove up from Austin?
I did, in fact. Yes. Yeah. In fact, it was, I remember I was with a couple of fraternity brothers and another friend from high school, and we were able to score tickets, and like four or five of us went to the Dallas-Minnesota game. And then we ended up going back to campus early to watch the Super Bowl and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So,
we're going streaking! Come on, everybody!
That actually was me in college, I have to admit.
I'm glad I know you now and
not then. Just at least I wasn't old, like he portrays in the movie there, you know? That was the good thing, but we actually kind of did this. That was part of our fraternity hazing rituals, you know? We'd make the kids go to the top of the RLM building, and then they would have to, when they got to the roof, they didn't know what was going to happen. We'd make them take off all their clothes and throw it 30 floors down.
Fat, over the drunk, side of the... and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
That was me.
What was your frat?
That was me. Beta Theta Pi. Oh, God. Now I've put them on warning here. Now they're probably going to be probably going to get researched for hazing. No. It was good. It was all in good fun. It was all in good fun. So it was a blast, actually. It was a
lot. Blue, you're my boy!
Yeah. Blue! We've got web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. We will hear coming up very shortly from Gene Frenette, the Florida Times Union, and we got time for you right here in the playbook.
You're my boy, Blue!
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots Instant Game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots Instant Game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room. And now, great moments in Patriots playbook history.
Eric, you're outnumbered now. There's another lady in the room.
I know.
Yes.
I absolutely love it.
What's going on?
This is great.
Has this ever happened before?
For me?
Like more women than...
No. Sadly.
Oh, geez.
That's another great moment inside the playbook.
You know what I want for Christmas, John?
That's great. You and every other red-blooded male. or you want a do-over. One or the other.
With the voices in the clip?
Really.
All right, calm down back there.
I love it. That's funny. That's so good. All right.
I'm already in trouble for what I said.
Gene Frenette from the Florida Times Union is going to join us here in a little bit. One of the things, though, that I'd love to ask him, and we'll get to your emails here in a moment, but one of the things I want to ask him is, and I'm wondering what your impression might be, Eric, on this apparent little spat, and I don't even know if it's a spat, but if you know, it seems to be a little going back and forth here between Fred Taylor and Jack Del Rio, because obviously Taylor, being a former Jaguar, spent his entire career at Jacksonville before he came this way, and then Fred, you know, this last week saying that, you know, in the last week they've done more film study than he did in his entire career at Jacksonville, yeah. And I think he probably meant that wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know what I mean, but apparently Jack Del Rio did not take it that way, and so now they're trying to make nice about it, and I wonder if the Jaguars are using that as any sort of, you know, bulletin board material.
I think their defense is Del Rio.
I thought you were going to actually ask me about the spat in Minnesota that's going on between the
I could ask you about that one,
the
too.
The overrated, washed-up, over-the-hill quarterback and the doesn't-deserve-to-be-their head coach. But you didn't ask me about that, so I'll ask you about
so
that.
So I won't comment that'll about be, that. That'll be next. That'll be next.
But, yeah, I did. I saw that. I thought Del Rio had the right response to what Taylor said, which was, well, when you were here, Fred, you were one of the veteran leaders. Maybe you should have kind of stepped up and done it yourself.
Right.
So it kind of Taylor, I think, kind of set himself up for that kind of response.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's really I don't know if that's the kind of thing that gets another player's blood boiling enough to put it on the bulletin board. Like if you came out and said they have no defense, they can't stop us. That's bulletin board material to me. I don't think what he said is enough to get them to say, oh, man, we got to beat them now because of what Fred said.
Well, but could you turn that around and say, hey, you know what? He doesn't think that we work hard around here. Why don't we show him?
Maybe. But, you know, if he's saying that, maybe that was the prevailing sentiment. Maybe that was actually the case.
Maybe it is.
You know, maybe there are guys back there who are saying, you know what? Maybe we're 7-7 because we just don't watch enough damn film. Maybe they agree with him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe Del Rio takes it at issue because, you know, he's the one on the hot seat there.
Right.
But maybe Fred Taylor's only saying what a lot of his other teammates thought.
Well, let's get the thoughts then of someone who covers the Jags day in and day out. Gene Frenette, columnist for the Florida Times Union, joining us here inside the Patriots Playbook. Gene, it's John and Eric. How are you?
I'm doing fine, guys. Merry Christmas to all of you.
Merry Christmas to you, too. We were obviously just talking about, you know, what Fred Taylor had to say earlier this week and what Jack Del Rio's response was to his, I guess, alleging that not much film study was done during his time as a Jaguar. What do you make of this whole back and forth?
Well, Fred's always been a guy that's tried to be as honest and forthright as possible. And sometimes Fred has a – if you talk to Fred long enough, he's at some point going to make a statement that's probably going to, you know, tweak somebody a little bit. It's not an all-out insult or anything like that. But, hey, I mean, let's face it. When you look at the Patriots' success over the years and you look at Bill Belichick and what his reputation has been there, you kind of sort of get the feeling, if you're an outsider looking in, that, you know, the Patriots, look, success in anything, whether it's NFL football or whatever industry you want to talk about, the people who are most successful, I've always believed, tend to work a little bit harder than the others. And, you know, that doesn't mean that other people don't work hard. I just feel like Bill Belichick is it kind of a guy that's a little bit more of a detailed guy. You go, you know, I think little things have a tendency to not be as overlooked in the way he does things as opposed to maybe some others. And I think that's maybe what Fred was getting at, that they go maybe a little bit more the extra mile in New England than they do maybe what they were in Jacksonville. And, you know, if you're a head coach in Jacksonville, you're a little bit chafed about that. But, Fred has at least got that perspective because he's been in both camps.
Sure. Understood. Do you think in any stretch that Jack Del Rio is the kind of guy that, even though there may not be a lot to this, that he might try to flip this around and use it to his advantage this week?
Oh, sure. I think he's already tried by sort of implying that, well, Fred, if you didn't think we studied as much film here in Jacksonville, you were one of the veteran leaders,
yeah.
So maybe you should have done your part to facilitate that.
Right.
I think that's what Jack was basically saying in his response to Fred's comments. And, you know, I don't think it's anything that's going to put a permanent thorn in their relationship or anything like that. But, you know, it's game week and it's gamesmanship and all that other stuff. So, I don't think it'll be a big deal down the road. But for now, it's probably something that probably sticks in Jack's craw a little bit.
Gene, we were talking on the show a little bit earlier about what the Patriots' identity might be, because Tom Brady made some comments this week about how they're still searching for that identity, and some of the players on offense kind of confirm that, and we're trying to sort of put our finger on what the Patriots' identity is. I think, at least for those of us up here who cover the team, looking at this week's game, we're having a hard time pinpointing what Jacksonville's identity is. What's your sense of what kind of team that is? I mean, obviously they're a 500 team, but if you had to describe their identity in a few words, what would that be on either side of the ball?
I think Jacksonville's identity is of a team, of a young team that has overhauled their roster for the most part, not all of it, but certainly a good part of it. And they're growing and they're evolving. And, like anything else, there's going to be some mistakes made along the way. There's going to be some games where they look like a young team, and there's going to be other games where they look like a team that's that's developing and growing is going to be a pain in the butt for some people.
So it sounds a little bit like New England.
Yeah, when I look at New England, and I'm from New England, I look at as a team that's still pretty darn good, but age is catching up with them, and they are on the downside of that. I don't look at New England anymore and see a dynasty anymore. I look at a team that's trying to hang on what it once was and has some parts in place to be able to be that team at times, but can't be it on a consistent basis. And so, I think that's my view of what New England's identity is. Jacksonville's identity is still evolving because, they're changing the parts to this team. And their identity, to me, is still a team that's trying to find its way on defense. Jacksonville's biggest problem, and it's manifested itself every time they face Tom Brady, is they're a team that has trouble putting pressure on the quarterback. I mean, the last time these two tight teams faced each other, Tom Brady went 26 for 28. He was sacked on the very first play of the game by John Henderson, and then after that was barely touched. And consequently had one of those phenomenal pass completion games, which is not unusual against this defense. Peyton Manning completed 13 in a row. Chad Henne the week before that completed 17 in a row. Kurt Warner had a field day against them, and these were all games that were played in Jacksonville. Now they've got to go to New England where they're 0-5 and really haven't. The only time really Jacksonville came close to beating New England, ironically, was the very first time that they played them. They lost 20-6 in the AFC Championship game of the 96 season, but it was a 13-6 game late in the fourth quarter, and the Jaguars were in the Patriots' red zone looking for the tying score, and Mark Brunell got intercepted.
Yeah, I remember that very well. Yeah, very well. Sort of along the lines, then, of what you were just talking about there, Gene, obviously, you know, these teams have been in the playoffs against each other. This, in effect, is sort of a de facto playoff game, especially where the Jaguars are concerned. You mentioned 96. Obviously, again, in 05 and again in 07, the Patriots knocked the Jags out of the playoffs in those situations. Does that work in Jacksonville's favor, knowing what some of the past history was? I mean, I'm not, without looking at the roster, looking at how many guys have actually been around for the last couple of years anyway, just in terms of the mindset, does that help or hurt in this instance?
Oh, no. I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, it works for the Patriots. I mean, if you've beaten somebody every time they've come up to your place. I mean, the Jaguars have only one win in their entire history over the Patriots, and that was in the playoffs wild card round back in 98.
Mm-hmm, right.
No, I mean, the Jaguars have a history of not playing all that great in New England. Now, the last time they did go up there, they played a very good offensive game. I thought David Garrard had one of his better games as a Jaguar, kind of stayed with Brady there, kind of like answer for answer until the Jaguars, you know, turned two potential touchdowns into field goals, and that was kind of like the difference in that game. They dropped Dennis Northcutt dropped the ball about at the 1 or 2 yard line, and Matt Jones dropped a touchdown pass. They had to settle for field goals in both instances. And, You know, the MO with the Patriots is that they're going to score 27 to 31 points against the Jaguars like they always do when they're up in New England, and the Jaguars are going to have a good offensive day, or it's going to be a long day. I mean, I think that's pretty much what the history has said between these two teams, and the Jaguars have the fewest sacks in the NFL. They got 14, and, you know, there's no reason to think that that's going to change in week 16 of the NFL football season.
How
so, you know, they're going to have to rely on two things. They're either going to have to rely on getting a better pass rush, which I don't see happening, or they're going to have to get a turnover or two and hope Brady or somebody puts the ball on the ground or there's an interception and that they can their offense can stay on the field and keep their defense off the field.
How much does John Henderson miss Marcus Stroud next to him in that on that front four?
I don't think nearly as much as people think. I think more has been made of that than anything, because when the Jaguars traded Marcus Stroud to Buffalo, Marcus Stroud had not been the Marcus Stroud that they had known in previous years. And I'm not saying that to downgrade him or anything like that, but he was not in Pro Bowl form when they released him to Buffalo. And even though he's played pretty well since then, I mean, it's not as if the Marcus Stroud is the Marcus Stroud of 2003 and 2004. And quite frankly, the guy they've got there in his place, Terrence Knighton, the rookie, nickname of Pot Roast, he's done okay. He hasn't done great, but he's done okay. And he's part of the development and evolving team that I'm talking about. They're starting four rookies. They got two offensive tackles that are rookies. They got Derek Cox, a cornerback, and they've got Terrence Knighton, the defensive tackle. Those are the four rookies that have been starting, and they've got other rookies that have seen a lot of significant playing time. Tyron Brackenridge, as a nickelback, has seen quite a bit of time. Mike Thomas, the receiver, has been a little bit of an impact player for them at times. It's a situation where David Garrard, as the veteran quarterback, who I think is a okay quarterback in this league, at times he can look a lot more than okay, and other times he can look below okay, depending on how well they're protecting him. He's proven that he can be in the game with the elite quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, but he hasn't proven that he can beat them. And that's where, that's kind of where the Jaguars are at. You know, they've got to win. If they win this game, they know they've got better than a 50-50 shot of getting the playoffs, because it's very unlikely that both Baltimore and Denver will both win out. Baltimore's got to go to Pittsburgh. Denver's got to go to Philly. So if the Jaguars can win this game, then all they got to do is win at Cleveland the final week, and they'll probably get one of the wild card spots. So
by the way,
all the incentive in the world.
Gene, by the way, I got to mention, I love that nickname, Pot Roast. How did he get that?
He was on a flight on a road trip somewhere early in the season, and the flight attendant asked him what he wanted, and Pot Roast happened to be one of the options that night. So he ordered Pot Roast, and for some reason the name just stuck. And I told him, I said, actually, you really blew it that night by ordering Pot Roast, because I said what you really should have ordered would have been Porterhouse, because then if you had ordered Porterhouse, then you had all kinds of marketing options, you know, with Outback something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, who markets Pot Roast? Nobody.
I'm surprised he got the name to stick. I'm sure there are other people on the plane that ordered the Pot Roast, no?
Yeah, but it just, I think it was Clint Ingram that put that moniker on, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, it's a great nickname, Pot Roast. You can't do anything with it from a marketing standpoint.
No kidding. Gene Frenette again from the Florida Times-Union with us. Last two games obviously been excruciating losses for this team. To Miami by 4 points, to the Colts by four. Watched the entire Colts game myself, and I know that it just must have been excruciating for those players on the sideline to see something like that slip away. And I've really rarely seen, that I can recall, Gene, and maybe you can also kind of pitch in here, but a game that went as back and forth as that Colt game did. Literally, you had one team score, and then the next team, the next possession, the other team would score, and then the next team would score, and then the next team would, I mean, it just ended up literally who had the ball last would win the game. And so how are these guys now, how are they recovering from that, and do you think it has any lingering effect?
Well, I think that's the big question going into this week. I mean, I've said it before. I've covered this team for the entire history of the franchise, and those were the two biggest back-to-back punches to the gut that they've ever taken.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see. The MO of this team has been pretty resilient through the course of the year, even though they had they obviously had two very bad losses out on the West Coast at Seattle and at San Francisco. But other than that, they've been pretty good about bouncing back, and I expect this week that at some point in the fourth quarter the Jaguars might possibly have an opportunity to win this game. Now whether they go ahead and do it is another matter, but this team has been pretty resilient, and I think there'd be a lot of disappointment if they went up to New England and laid an egg, which certainly could happen if Tom Brady gets the jump on them.
Well, this team, certainly has one of the better runners in the league, Maurice Jones-Drew. The Patriots have been kind of skittish in defending the run, so I'm certain that they'll try to figure out a way to get the ball to him as much as they humanly possibly can. It also seems to me that a guy like, Mike Sims-Walker, here's a name that, is probably not a household name, certainly for a lot of fans around here, and yet I know he's kind of picked up a bit of a hot hand, and I think he's been one of those guys you kind of alluded to. They've got a couple of guys on this team that can actually catch the ball and come up with some big plays. And so how much more of a great game do guys like Sims Walker, how much more do they need to really be expected to contribute for this team to have a legitimate chance at winning on the road?
Well, I mean, I think you said it best. You need contributions a little bit from everybody. Now, it does start with Maurice Jones-Drew. If Maurice Jones-Drew does not have a big game, I don't think that they can win up in New England. I mean, he's got to be able to do what he did against Indianapolis, and that is he had 110 yards rushing in that game. I think he had about 40 yards receiving, but he made one big play on the touchdown where Garrard went on the naked bootleg. Nothing was there. He reversed field, came back, and Maurice Jones-Drew, who was blocking on the play, had the presence of mind to take off for the end zone once Garrard reversed his field. And David laid a nice little perfect little rainbow touchdown pass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the kind of plays that Maurice Jones-Drew has to make against a team like New England, who I think is going to score a significant amount of points in this game. You alluded to Mike Sims-Walker. He's been obviously clearly their big play receiver. I mean, they acquired Torrey Holt from the Rams, but Torrey Holt is clearly on the downside of his career. What Torrey Holt has provided for the Jaguars is a guy, a veteran presence in the locker room to help counsel those young receivers. And he's also kind of been a move-the-chains type guy. There's usually about two or three catches he's going to have during the course of a game that are going to move the chains. But he's not the big play guy anymore. Torrey Holt hasn't even caught a touchdown pass in an entire year. Yeah, I think against the Falcons in December of last year when he was still with the Rams was the last time that he scored a touchdown. So Mike Sims-Walker is a touchdown guy. And the other guy you got to watch out for is Mercedes Lewis, the tight end. He's averaging about 16.2 yards per catch this year. He's only got two touchdowns, but he has stepped up his game a little bit more this year, and he's been a favorite target of David Garrard. And you can expect David Garrard to go to him three, four, five times in this game as well.
Well, I've got to ask you one more. It doesn't really have a lot to do with the game this weekend, but certainly the news that Jacksonville's had big struggles in selling out their stadium and blackout being lifted and such. And where do you feel like the future of this team really lies at this point in time? And is the future of this team still going to be in Jacksonville?
Well, I mean, obviously that's a good question. My gut answer is probably yes, and I say that for this reason. I just don't know where this team is going to go. I mean, everybody keeps mentioning Los Angeles, but until they get all those, apparently, there's a guy there that's ready to get that stadium all set and ready to go. But it's one thing to talk about moving a franchise. It's another thing to actually pull the trigger and do it. And, the NFL has been very reluctant in its history to relocate franchise. They don't like doing it. And the other component here is owner Wayne Weaver has been here in Jacksonville for the entire time. I don't see this team moving at all as long as Wayne Weaver owns the team. Now, if he goes and sells the team at some point, maybe the next 5 years, then I could see that it might be a possibility if they're still having the attendance issues that they had this year. But let's keep in mind, the Jaguars had no blackout at all in 2008, and all of a sudden they blacked out every game in 2009 with the exception of this last Colts game. So, I'm still waiting to see if this year is an anomaly or whether it's something that's going to start a trend. But one thing's for sure, they lost 17,000 season ticket holders this past year. They got back about 2,400, so they had a net loss of about 15,000.
Wow.
It's very unlikely that they're going to get all that back in 1 year, even if, by some minor miracle they were to make the playoffs this year and get a little bit of juice going into next year. You're not just going to all of a sudden get that many season ticket holders back. But I think gradually, if it does come back, I think Jacksonville will be okay. But there's no question, hey, it's dicey right now. When you look out that stadium and you see 20,000 empty seats at most of the home games, that's a problem. And certainly, if that trend were to continue, then I would say the future of this team in Jacksonville would be very bleak.
Well, I didn't realize that it was that extraordinary in terms of the drop-off of season tickets. Is that economy-based?
I would think mostly it would be the economy, but I don't think that's all of it. I think there's been a little bit of a disconnect, too, amongst the fans because last year was a huge disappointment. They were expected to be a playoff team, maybe even contending for a Super Bowl. They were talking about that at the beginning of the year, and you end up 5-11, obviously, and you go 2-6 in home games. That's going to put a lot of doubt in people's minds about whether they want to invest their money.
Sure.
In the future of the franchise, particularly when the economy is going bad at the same time.
Sure, understood. Gene Frenette again from the Florida Times Union. And Gene, Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you and your family, and safe travels up this way.
Okay, guys, good to talk with you.
Thank you. You
take
bet.
Care.
Gene Frenette again from the Florida Times Union. I love talking to this guy. I mean, we've talked to him before in the past, when we've had Jacksonville on the schedule. And so when I knew that we were actually going to get a chance to speak to him today, one thing I remember about Gene is that he is extraordinarily. What's a good word for it? Honest. You can tell he absolutely wears his opinions right out on his shirt sleeve. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here's a guy, as he said, he has covered this team from the inception of the franchise. So he is as locked into anybody in Jacksonville on the Jaguars as anybody there is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he says 15,000 fewer season ticket holders, and a lot of and that there's a disconnect.
Could you imagine
between,
that number here?
Oh my God! It would be like if we had 15,000 less in 1 year.
Yeah,
it'd be like a revolution game.
Well, it would be there'd be Armageddon number one, but number two, fortunately for the Patriots, they've still got a waiting list where they could slide right in and fill that out. So it would take several years of 15,000 drop off. You would have to probably lose a stadium's worth of fans. Over the course of about a 5 year period, really, for it to matter here. But that's significant in Jacksonville. So that really should not be, just thrown away to the side here when you consider the Jaguars overall, because when he mentions the word disconnect, that means to me there's something between what the team is doing in relation to the city in which they live in that's not connecting. I think it goes further than just wins and losses on the field.
Yeah, they haven't established the fan base.
Right.
The fervent fan base that they need around here.
Let me hearken back to 1993, okay? Because the Patriots were going through the very same thing.
Oh, with St. Louis?
That Jacksonville seems to be going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner at the time, which was...
Only they'd been around for a lot longer.
They'd been around for a lot longer, yes. But James Bushworthwine, who owned the team at the time, mm-hmm. There was the courtship, a very open courtship with St. Louis, because that's where the Anheuser-Busch money was and yada, yada.
The Cardinals were in Arizona.
Cardinals had just moved to Arizona. St. Louis was looking for a team again. And, you know, and of course, we've been having crowds very similar to what Jacksonville's having
mm-hmm.
right now. I mean, let's not forget, we're not all that far removed from these days.
No, I am.
And it took, you know, the Krafts and the Kraft family, you know, at the last minute to come in and kind of swoop in, and ownership was what kept the team here. Curious that he says ownership is probably what will keep the team in Jacksonville as opposed to new ownership coming in and potentially moving it.
That's in the near term.
Yeah, in the near term. That I find that a little different. My guess is, because I know Wayne Weaver has been in some ill health. I know he's had some heart issues and what have you. My guess would be that, you know, if he sells the franchise, that unless you find somebody with deep pockets, you know, in that Northern Florida area, that, yeah, Los Angeles is definitely a destination.
The league would probably prefer that it get, if it were to get sold, that it gets sold to somebody on the West Coast.
Absolutely.
For some reason, the NFL is obsessed with having a team in that city. I don't see it.
I don't know that I would say obsessed, because we've gone with a team now for quite a while.
Yeah,
but
they talk about it constantly.
Well, it's
the
because
league constantly wants
it's
to have
the,
a team
it's
there.
It's because it's the second largest city in the continental United States.
But they have
and it's
a
the
team.
Only one.
Southern California has a team. They're called the San Diego Chargers. You put that team on television in the L.A. market.
I thought you were going to say Trojans.
Well, they have them too, yeah. But any excuse to play the song. I love it.
I know.
I mean, really, they do.
Why don't they put the Charger games on in L.A.?
That's all they need to do, John. That's all. They don't need a team physically in the city. They have a team in Southern Cal.
And if I'm San Diego, why don't you market to L.A. somehow?
Exactly. It makes no sense. But ever since the Raiders and the Rams left L.A., every commissioner has been, oh, we got to get a team back there. Got to get a team. No, you don't. You don't need a team in Los Angeles.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that you don't need a team in L.A. because they've survived, and the league has survived.
Oh,
the league
yeah.
has not only survived, it's thrived.
Right.
Without a team in L.A.
Plus, there's already a team in the area. It's 2 hours away or whatever San Diego is, but it's still there. That's Southern California.
Yeah.
That's Southern California's team, the Chargers.
I didn't really intend for this to turn into that, but
sorry, yeah,
but
yeah.
It's sort of an indictment on, you know,
just
the
push
Jaguars.
The button there, John.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I just...
meanwhile, the Patriots will celebrate their 169th consecutive sellout on Sunday.
Yeah, since that time when right. they were in the position that apparently Jacksonville is in right now.
Right.
So there. I just thought it was kind of an interesting dichotomy. All
mm-hmm.
right, be careful now, Jason. Don't trip over that word.
I know that one.
Okay. I just thought it was an interesting parallel.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
yeah.
a different one for you there. But
I know that one, too.
Excellent. Okay.
I thought he was going to say, I don't know that one.
Just checking. But I really thought
Teach
it was.
Teach kids how to ski and tell them to make their skis parallel.
Nice. That's the up and down thing, right? Together like that, parallel.
For the kids, it's make them look like French fries.
Oh, I thought he was going to make it look like two lowercase L's. If you could do that, then you're in good shape.
Man, it's time for me to go upstairs. Obviously, they're debating the definition
done.
Of parallel. Kids skiing, French fries.
I thought it was an interesting parallel with what they're going through and what we
yeah,
went through.
It is.
What is it? Almost 17 years ago.
Yeah.
So, all right. Very good. Have a very merry Christmas.
You too, sir. I will see you next week from today. I guess.
Yes, actually, you will. But actually, next Wednesday, I won't be in the basement. I'll actually be in South
hotel.
Bend, Indiana.
Presidential suite.
I'm going to do the show. I'm going to do the show next Wednesday from the College Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, really?
Yes. I've decided I'm going to find, you know, a situation there where I can at least pick up a phone.
And that's one of those sites that earlier in the year you said every football fan should get to.
Yes.
Right.
And you should do that. So
and
I figured
before it goes to Atlanta, right? Isn't it going to Atlanta?
It's going to Atlanta, I think, in another two and a half years. This may be my last chance to see it in South Bend because I don't know what the schedule is going to call for.
Yeah.
So, and it's right across the street from where I'm staying. So I'm going to go do the show with you next Wednesday from the College Football
Hall
of Fame in South Bend,
That's
Indiana.
That's very cool.
How's that?
That's very cool.
Does that work for you guys?
It works for me.
Yeah, sure.
And Eric, I'll see you next year if I don't see you tomorrow.
Really? Why?
I'm gone next week.
He's
really?
Gone, yeah. Yeah. He's going to Denver. He's going to go scout out.
Are you really?
Yeah.
He's going to go scout.
Yes.
Good for you.
Skiing. Nice. Which resort do you go to?
Mike O.C., loyal emailer Bill from Beaver Creek. Mike,
near
to
the Vail area?
Can take care of you a little bit?
Go up to Vail and then maybe go to well, actually, I'm going to wear the nice little jacket he sent us that says Doc on it and see if I can scam free skiing.
Nice.
And then probably go ski at Copper for a day.
Nice. Nice. Copper Mountain, I've been there before. I haven't been to too many places, but that was one that I've been to.
I want to go skiing. I've never been.
You've never been?
No.
I'll teach you.
How long have you lived here?
My whole life.
And you've never been skiing?
No.
What are you, sick?
I know. Well, I've never been to Block Island either, and I've lived in Rhode Island my whole life.
What? Oh, my God. I think I'm going to be sick.
What?
Next
how old
year,
are you?
Once the season's over, I'll teach you how to ski.
Once the season's over?
You're going to pay for my lift ticket and all my equipment and all that stuff?
Sure.
Look at my money bags back there.
No, I like it.
Oh, you know a guy?
I'll take care of that.
Do you really?
By the way, Gene Frenette had mentioned he's a New Englander. He's from Vermont originally.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he is. Yeah, and I knew that about him. I remember that coming up in conversation. So we were talking about, you know, good Vermont creameries and some good old fashioned maple syrup and all that stuff.
Ben and Jerry's.
Ben and Jerry's from Vermont. I mean, Vermont brings a lot to the table as far as New England's concerned. We got good fans from Vermont. You know, we really do. All right,
John.
Happy holidays.
You too, sir.
Talk to you
next week.
All right, we're going to take the time out here, and then again, our question of the day has to do with identity for this New England Patriots team. What kind of an identity does this team have right now in your mind? If you could cut it down to two or three words, identify the 2009 New England Patriots. Get to some of your answers, some of your other thoughts as we get ready for Jacksonville coming up in the playbook.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape serving trays.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam, Peter, Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehallatpatriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
All right, now you've done it. Okay, this is it. This is what I was talking about yesterday. This is a little, this is good stuff here. Now, this is Andy Williams, right? Or is this Bing Crosby?
It's Bing.
Okay, all right. I did mention Bing yesterday on the show, I know.
You said nothing means more than Christmas to you than hearing Bing sing.
Voice. Yeah, that's right, Bing sing.
And I told you I was saving something for tomorrow.
Very nice.
And I keep my promise.
Very nice. That's very good. Well, that's very nice of you. Very kind of you to do that. Would you like me to play Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song now?
I did that yesterday.
Yes, I know you did. How is Hanukkah handled in your household? You guys do the whole candle and the prayer ceremony and everything when you light the candles at night? Or
yeah, my wife and I would light the candles, say the prayers, but we didn't do eight nights of presents.
You don't?
No.
See, I don't find, when I was younger and my friends who celebrated Hanukkah, they obviously, you know, had held it way over our heads that I had eight nights of this stuff, you know.
And most of my friends, as a kid.
Yeah, most of my friends got, you know, eight gifts in eight nights, and it was huge. And we did this with my youngest, you know, my little one as well, when he was younger, simply because, you know, it was a way for him to kind of get into learning about what, you know, the tradition is and what the meaning of the lighting of the candle and, you know, the whole oil in the lamp and the whole story that goes on here, which is part of, you know, what Hanukkah is all about. And then as we've gotten older, I don't know if it's just because we're tired of buying eight gifts or whatever it means, but, you know, it just doesn't seem to matter near as much anymore. Maybe that kind of goes along with the whole Christmas shopping buying thing, too.
I think the eight gifts thing for me kind of ran its course as the dollar value of the gifts started going
down.
Not so much down.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
You know, when I wanted that Super Nintendo,
then you
which
got
the big
that.
Gift.
You got
that,
but you didn't get anything else for the other like seven nights.
Correct.
Right.
Get
exactly.
The big gift and maybe some candy.
See, the way that my wife would handle it is all right. If you want eight gifts, you'll get eight gifts, but they're all going to be like, you know, eight things from the dollar store.
Here's your new pair of socks.
Here's your new pair of socks.
Your boxers.
Here's your pair of underwear. That's right.
And a cashmere sweater like Eric wears.
It's like, okay, where's the fun in that? Oh, goodness. I had tons of friends that celebrated that way growing up, and it turns out as we all got older, it was sort of a morphing of the holidays. You know, I had a lot of Jewish friends who had Christmas trees, you know, so I never thought anything about it. And I remember thinking the first bar mitzvah that I went to, I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty cool. I thought that was really neat because I must have gone to probably half a dozen of them, you know, growing up when I was around, you know, 13, 14 years old. It's about age 13, right?
Yep.
Generally speaking. And I just remember thinking how neat that was. And so it's always been a part of my culture, too. Even though I'm not Jewish, I've always paid special attention to when Hanukkah is during the course of the calendar year, and wouldn't you know it, my wife's Jewish, and so we celebrate Hanukkah every year anyway. So it just kind of continues something we've already started. So I always try to make it a point when I say happy holidays, not knowing if someone's either, you know, Christian or Jewish, but to say not only happy holidays, but if I know, to mention happy Hanukkah, simply because it usually falls around the same time frame, but it doesn't fall at the same time every year. The one thing that really kills me is the Hebrew calendar. That thing is all over the place.
Lunar.
That's what it is? It's based on the lunar calendar?
Yep.
I don't even think I knew that. That's just, but it's not the same date every year. It just doesn't make any sense.
You know what today is, though?
No, what is today?
Festivus.
Today's Festivus?
Today is Festivus. I heard it on the radio this morning. Actually, I heard it on the news.
Who decided that?
It's what came out of Seinfeld.
But why would it be? Oh, because it's the day before Christmas Eve?
That's how it was written in the show, and it stuck. So Festivus. When you get home tonight, you can have
Happy Festivus.
Feats of strength.
Nice.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Festivus for the rest of us. All right, well, then happy Festivus, everybody. That's right. I had forgotten that it was the day before Christmas Eve was supposed to be Festivus. All right, beautiful. Well, then happy Festivus. All right, let's go to the...
You really went bald there, didn't you?
Almost. All right, to the email inbox, webradio@patriots.com. And, again, coming up at this hour, we're going to go into the locker room. Dan Copen, Wes Walker, and Jarvis Green were those being interviewed today, so you're going to hear from those guys. We never got to Maurice Jones-Drew yesterday. Is that worthwhile getting to today, Doc?
Sure.
Okay. Well, it must have been at least decent then, whatever he had to say. So that's good. We'll get to that as well coming up in this particular hour. John, who says he's a longtime Pats fan from Virginia, why is Tom Brady not using all of his options on offense? He's been always praised as a quarterback that would involve everyone, Troy Brown and the rest of our no-name receivers on offense. And all he tends to do now is throw to Welker, and Moss. How about our tight ends and backs? Our offense is so freaking predictable that it's almost pathetic at times. Brady needs to wake up if he is our so-called leader and address his play first and foremost because it sucks. I'm not exaggerating on what I just said there. Okay. Thank you, John, longtime Pat fan in Virginia. You know, the comments that you have here certainly are things that we've all talked about here. The play calling is a major issue. And we kind of mentioned this early in the year. We mentioned it around the halfway point. I think we probably mentioned it again even as recently as a week ago. The play calling is sort of an amalgamation of several different entities. And I think Mike Reese even blogged about it as well this week. If I recall correctly, sometimes my weeks run together here. But it's sort of a play-calling-by-committee scenario. I mean, Bill O'Brien is a part of it. You know, running backs, coach, tight ends, I mean, they're all a part of it. Passing game coordinators, they're all part of it. And then Belichick kind of sort of oversees it all and inevitably signs off on it. What it sounds like to me is that sometimes – the play calling is so vanilla because you can't reach a consensus on some of the other things that you'd like to do. And so it's kind of like, well, this is something we can all agree on, so let's run this. And I don't think that's conducive to a winning environment. What I'm going to suggest to you is that you go back to the way things were with a definitive play caller, whether that's Charlie Weiss, whether that's another Josh McDaniels, whether or not Bill O'Brien ends up becoming that, because, again, there has to be a learning curve involved for someone who's new. And as we've suggested already and suggested again even on this program today, we are in a period of transition. Hello? Have you not realized that yet? We're in a period of transition here, but we're in a period of transition not only within the coaching staff, but also within the personnel making decisions and within the roster makeup of the team. So you've got to give this, you know, transition a chance to hook on. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're a new guy on the job, you're a sales guy, and yet you're expected to produce top dollar from day one. That's unfair to the new sales guy. It just is not going to happen. So I think you have to realize that if you're going to go with this system, then you're going to have to give guys like O'Brien and everybody else who's involved here an opportunity to contribute. If you decide that that's not the way to go, and see, to me, too many hands in the pie makes for, you know, a busy kitchen and salmonella. That's basically how I look at it. So I think that's why in football you've got to have one chief and a lot of Indians doing the Chiefs' bidding. That means you got to have somebody making the decisions. And I don't think they have that one, in fact, I'm sure of it, they don't have the one definitive play caller that you need that they've had in the previous few years. That, to me, is as big a contributing factor to the malaise that the offense has gone through from time to time this year, and unfortunately for the last 4 weeks, it seems to be right now. The offense is going through right now. That's as big a contributing factor as I think any. Throw in the injuries, throw in the rust, throw in everything else that's in there, but just the fact that you're breaking in new people. That's part of it. Dagmar's on the phone in Miami. Hey, Dag, what's happening? Happy holidays.
Hey, John, happy holidays to you, too. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners, and, you know, wishing for them the best for all your crew, doctor, and everybody who works at the Patriots Radio Network.
Thank you, man.
I basically wanted to call before Christmas Day to, you know, say all this, you know, especially to you guys for all the effort that you guys put up together through the entire year. Give you thanks for all the wonderful job and to keep us update with the team news and with your thoughts and inside analysis, which is always valuable to all the fans. And just wanted to ask you a quick question because I haven't been able to read anything about it, but are we able to count on Fred Taylor for this upcoming game?
Well, he's been practicing, so we don't know to what extent. My guess would be if there's any way possible for him to play, he's going to want to play against his old team. So if we don't see him this week, I don't know. I don't know that we would see him again till potentially the playoffs. I don't imagine that he would play the following week unless, of course, they just feel like they want to knock some rust off of him to get him ready for the playoffs. But I would say there's got to be at least a good chance that he would see some time this week. And we'll wait on the injury report a little bit after the top of the hour here to find out what his participation level was. But I know he's been out on the field.
Oh, okay, okay. No, that's kind of like what I thought. I thought that he was, if he was going to be back before the playoff, it was always going to happen this week, because I don't think for the next week, depending on the result of this week and how things unfold with the other teams in the division, I don't think they're going to risk, in case that we can clinch the division this week. I don't think they're going to use him next week. They're basically going to go over the second stringers and, you know, just to,
right.
Dagmar,
do you think that do you think the Patriots will win this week and rest the guys next week? Is that what you think?
Let me tell you, with all the injuries that we have had, like Matt Light and all the linemen, general, I do believe that. I mean, this is not the case of 07 when we had a chance to go and do something that was. You know, it hadn't been done since the 72 offense. This is a different case scenario. We have to take care of the guys this season. And if we have something already secure, I do believe they're going to try to at least, take care of the guys, not give them that many reps as any other regular game. Yeah,
okay.
I do think they're going to go that way. Hey, John, so anyways, I'll let you go because I know you want to go over a few things before you wrap up, before the holidays. So another question. Are you guys going to be back next week?
Yeah, we'll be here for shows Tuesday and Wednesday next week.
Okay, so I'll give you a call next week.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, man, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And, have a good time.
Absolutely. Bye. Thank you. You too. Dagmar in Miami. There you go. Why does it always sound like he's on a cell phone or on a payphone out in traffic somewhere? Do they still have payphones?
Hey, are you quoting The Hangover?
Huh?
Are you quoting The Hangover? Yeah. Do you have a payphone bank?
You have a payphone bank? That's funny. And I didn't even see the movie. I've only seen clips. I got to go see the movie. Or I'll wait. It's on video now, isn't it?
What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, exactly. What you talking about, Willis?
That's a clip from it.
Yes.
You got to see it.
Yeah,
I would recommend probably not watching it with your kids.
No?
They're a little too young.
You think? Even my 14-year-old?
Probably with him. Maybe.
He'd probably laugh until he cries, right?
You probably
some
will.
Sophomoric stuff in it.
Definitely will be on the floor laughing.
Well, then it sounds to me like it ought to be a movie that we play that mom is not in the house for.
Good call. Good call.
Kind of like Animal House.
In fact, I'll make sure you leave here today with a copy.
Nice! Nice! Oh, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to me. That's great.
Or you'll have it in your hand on Sunday. One
okay,
of the two.
Well,
we'll see which gets done first.
Whichever. Hey, I'm appreciative. I'm appreciative. All right, here we go. Sean sends this email, and I believe this is his description of the 2009 Patriots, it would appear. We asked you, at least initially, the program today to come up with an identity for this football team for this year. Since Tom Brady said earlier today, he's having trouble coming up with an identity for this team. And if Tom Brady is having trouble coming up with an identity for this team, can't we help him out a little bit here? Let's give the Patriots an identity for Christmas. Sean says, 2009 Pats, dazed and confused. That's actually pretty good. Things just don't make sense. Offense is misfiring for an unknown reason. Defense is young with no playmakers. And the players that are supposed to be playmakers are not making plays. This team could easily be 7-7 or 6-8. A very frustrating season. Well, hard to disagree. That's one thing that I like about it here. I mean, maybe one email or a day that I would have issue with in terms of disagreements. But it seems like the majority of us are all on the same page when it comes to how we interpret this team. And I would say that dazed and confused is probably as good a phrase to use as any. All right. Good call, Sean. Mike says, optimistically pessimistic on offense and defense. Okay. That's not a bad one either. That's sort of a a double entendre or whatever you want to call it, optimistically pessimistic. Like a double negative, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, look at it. You know, you're optimist, and then I'll just kind of leave that alone. I'm not even sure I can describe it. But thank you, Mike. Dave in Palm Bay, Florida says rebuilding and rehabilitating are the words that I choose to describe them. Rebuilding and rehabilitating. No, that's good. And then he adds here, he says, those are the words I choose for Bill's plan, and in Bill we trust. Look at what he has had to overcome, the loss of his entire defensive leaders, Vrabel, Brewski, Seymour, and on. He also lost Lawyer, Malloy, coaches, on and on. Tom is rehabilitating his knee and confidence, along with so much pressure on him to perform weekly. All right. You realize, though, of course, Dave, that the reason that, Bill Belichick lost a lot of those defensive leaders is because he chose to let them go, or he dealt them away. It wasn't because they chose to get up and leave. You know, this was general manager Belichick basically saying, all right, they're not worth the value, or we think we can get, you know, better players for the same type of money, et cetera, et cetera. So really, Bill Belichick is, you know, really has nobody to blame but himself for the loss of those defensive leaders. Whether you think that was a good thing or a bad thing, he really doesn't have any way to think about it except it's his fault. And I don't necessarily mean that in a negative sense. It's clear, and, you know, that, you know, early in the season when they did the whole Seymour thing off to Oakland, it's very clear that he has a definitive vision for this team. That's what, you know, Robert Kraft is paying him to do. To have that vision and to instigate a plan toward meeting that vision and that goal. And the thought was is that, you know, if we, I guess this is the thought, if we mortgage the immediate future here for the potential to be good now for, say, the next few years, we might be able to keep this so-called run going. That seems to me to be, in a roundabout way, what the decision basically boiled down to. I, however, on the other hand, from day one this year, if you've been with us at all any length of time this year, you know that I vehemently disagreed with that philosophy, that this team on paper, before the season started, looked to me to be certainly a Super Bowl contender, which is, I think, the overall majority of what fans thought, because otherwise I don't think we'd all be dazed and confused, as the case may be here, over the performance of this team. We would have expected less. No, we expected more. And apparently the only person that didn't expect more was Bill Belichick, because he let these guys go. Did it work? I think that we would probably largely have answers to the negative if we were to actually answer that question. But again, we're not the owners. We're not the coach. We're not player personnel people. We're fans and we're media. So, something to chew on a little bit. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. Time for you to get in your email. If you could describe, if you could hang a descriptive phrase, if you could give this team an identity for this year, what would it be? We'll continue with more in the playbook in a moment.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but I,
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A., member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening?
This is all good stuff, Doc. This is all very good stuff. Your repertoire here of Christmas music has been outstanding.
You asked for it, and you get it.
All right, that's great. It's one of the few things I ever asked for, and I get. But I'm appreciative of it. Got a surprise for you in the playbook this afternoon here, guys. Jeff Lagerman, former NFL standout, who I'm sure you're familiar with the name. He does the analysis work on the Jaguars radio network, and he joined us here on the Patriots playbook. Jeff, it's John Rook here in Foxborough. It's great to visit with you. Thanks for the time.
John, thanks for having me. Let me second you on the music selection there. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I like that. You know, we have to get in the mood around here, you know?
I have to. Heck, man, it's Christmas.
That's exactly. Well, you need to. Everybody should do that, right?
Absolutely.
Well, so then along those lines, how charitable are the Jaguars feeling right now? Because the Patriots have also had their share of struggles, but I think it's pretty clear to see that, you know, for all practical purposes, this is a de facto playoff game for the Jags coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely, and the last two were, you know, and unfortunately they lost both of them at home, one to the Miami Dolphins, and then Thursday night I'm sure everybody saw that game against the Indianapolis Colts that was back and forth, and it was a shame anybody had to lose that game because it was just so exciting. Nine lead changes in the ball game, and certainly a lot of question marks going into that game. Would the Indianapolis Colts play their guys or not? And the Jaguars weren't worried about it, and they came out and they played hard and they played well.
Right. Right. I asked this question of Gene Frenette. We had him on a short while ago, and I'd like to ask you the same question just to see, frankly, if your answers match a little bit. But the fact of the matter is that this team is coming off of two excruciating losses. You know, both games that I know that the guys in that locker room feel like they should have won, and that for some reason or other just couldn't get over the hump. The Colts game was wildly entertaining. Last team with the ball wins the game. Nevertheless, I know it makes it very, very tough to take. How much bounce back ability does Jacksonville have at this stage?
Well, I think having your playoff lives, you know, still there and for the taking, I think certainly, you know, gets a young team motivated again. So I would think that that's going to give them a lot of bounce back. You know, going into that game, they were expecting that things wouldn't happen for them elsewhere, and they did. So they're still in the hunt. You know, they're obviously not right there at the top, but I mean, with some of the schedules that the other teams that are in the hunt have, you know, there's a good chance the Jaguars could get back in. But, you know, you've got a tough task, as you know, taking Tom Brady on in the month of December at his place.
Right.
But, you know, hey, look, for the Jaguars football team this year, having 15 rookies on the roster now, and I don't know exactly what they started out with. I think it was 13 on opening day. But for them to do what they've done, to have a chance here in the last 2 weeks of the season with an opportunity to get in the playoffs, I mean, who in the world would have expected that after Gene Smith, the general manager, just, you know, to totally revamp the roster?
Did you agree with the revamping of this roster?
I think it was time, you know, and it was time because the locker room chemistry last year wasn't very good. They did it really, the anti-Belichick way, in that they went out in free agency and gave a lot of money to guys that didn't produce and guys that aren't even here anymore. And with any type of team, I don't care if you're a big market team, a small market team, when you start paying out, you know, $30-something million in signing bonus for guys that don't produce for you, I mean, what in the world is that going to do to the office place?
Sure.
I mean, it's not good, you know, whether it's, you know, a business or whether it's football or sports or anything else. It's just not good, and it wasn't good last year.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit that Jacksonville's been, at times this year, a very entertaining team to watch, and yet I know frustrating, and I think that's exactly the way Patriots fans look at their football team. At times, a very entertaining team to watch, but a lot of times they just make you want to pull their hair out. Where do you feel like Jacksonville's biggest negatives come from?
The biggest weakness they have right now is the ability to affect the passer or the ability to rush the quarterback. They're just not doing it. I think 12 sacks on the year is the defense, and that's a number that, you know, you'd feel real good about if it was in week three.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are, you know, coming into the 15th game of the year, and you've got 12 sacks. And they had number one pick last year, Derek Harvey, and a second-round pick, Quentin Groves, that they expected to kind of be their Freeney and Mathis, and that would get them over the hump against a Peyton Manning and against a Tom Brady and a very tough AFC conference that has great quarterbacking. And, hey, look, these guys just haven't been able to be that yet. That's going to be something Gene Smith is going to have to address in the offseason through the draft or through free agency. But, you know, hey, look, you and I both know it's hard to get premier pass rushers in free agency. They just don't get there.
I was just going to say, Jeff, that sounds extraordinarily a lot like what we got going on here in New England. I mean, the Patriots defense has had trouble getting pressure on the passer.
Yeah, and, you know, for the Jaguars, you know, when you start the opening game of the year out with a rookie at cornerback, you know, third-round pick in Derek Cox,
mm-hmm.
You've got safety issues, you know, because Reggie Nelson hasn't turned out to be a first-round talent. You went out and you got Sean Considine, who's been kind of a special teams ace/safety. Gerald Alexander, you got in a trade. And Anthony Smith, you got off of waivers. Hey, if you don't have a great secondary, then, you know, you can't play some coverages that are going to allow you to be able to challenge a quarterback by sending extra guys. So if you can't send extra guys and you're only sending four and sometimes three and you can't get there, it makes it tough, you know, especially when you got Matt Schaub, you know, Peyton Manning, you know, and the vaunted Tennessee Titans in the division.
Right, right. Well, I think one of the things that, at least to my knowledge, that Jacksonville obviously has going exceedingly well, is the talent that you have at running back. And Maurice Jones-Drew is one of the better younger players in the league. In fact, I read this week where I think he's not even yet 25 years old. So here's a guy that seems to have his future still way ahead of him. And does this team have a tendency maybe to depend on him too much, or are they not depending on him enough?
No, John, I think they use him enough, you know, and I think that anytime you got a premier player, you got to feed him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they're certainly doing that. But, you know, the funnest part about watching Maurice play, John, is not when he has the ball, but when he doesn't have the ball. The things that he does as a true competitor and just as a football player, we're talking about when the ball's turned over, the first one to make a tackle, Maurice Drew. When it comes time to do a blitz pickup, the best blocker and blitz pickup is Maurice Jones-Drew. Running a decoy route or whatever, I mean, Maurice is 100 miles an hour. And that's what makes him so much fun to watch, is because as impressive as he is with the ball in his hands, he's even more impressive when the ball is not in his hands. And to me, that's the mark of a true great competitor.
Yeah, I've always liked his running style. I know that a lot of people think he's a little short, but I mean, it's proof's in the production. And
short. Oh gosh, he is short.
Yeah, but
I remember playing against a guy that was short, and it was Eric Bieniemy.
Sure.
And Eric Bieniemy was one of the strongest players, and I remember when it came time to put a hat on Eric Bieniemy, you were making sure that you had your shoulders down, your head across.
What are you talking about? You're laying on the ground to get him.
And you would. You would actually take a guy like Eric Bieniemy low because he was just so powerful and he attacked you. And Maurice has that same style. And I remember telling Maurice that story. And he says, well, you know, that's kind of funny because he was my college coach.
See, I was actually going to go one worse than that. I said, that reminds me of a guy named Robert Newhouse, who used to run the football for the Dallas Cowboys. Same type of guy. Very short, but very small, very hard to get off his feet. I mean, you literally had to be laying on the ground to knock him off his feet. And I think those kind of backs in particular are making a real comeback in the NFL.
Well, and he's got great speed. You know, in the Tennessee game at Tennessee, he had two runs that were, you know, about 80 yards each, and he just outran the Tennessee defense. So, you know, when you combine, you know, I don't want to say height because that's not it with Maurice. It's size because he's got size, you know, 210 pounds, and he's short. He's 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
But he's got power. He's got the size, and he certainly has the mentality he's going to run over you. But when he has to, and he can, you know, has to turn on the jets, he can outrun you.
Would you guys be disappointed if you did not see Fred Taylor this weekend?
No, just because, you know, I love Fred. You know, he's probably one of my all-time favorite players, and I know what Fred can do, and Fred's greatness is never diminished whether he plays or not, you know, mm-hmm. in my eyes. You know, Fred was a first-round pick in 1998, which was my last year, and so I've got to see Fred grow from a young player that wow. was extremely shy from the University of Florida to being just not only a great player on the field, but really develop as a man off the field. And so nothing would ever diminish Fred in my eyes.
You've been out 11 years now?
Yeah, believe it or not. I'm getting old, man, 42.
Good grief. Now you just made me feel old. Wow. Well, I thought that's fantastic. I didn't realize it had been that long. It seems like you were still playing 4 or 5 years ago.
I can tell you my body feels like it was a long time in, and it was a long time ago.
Well, I get that. That's pretty much a universal feeling, I think, from guys who played this game.
Absolutely.
All right, what then, in your estimation, does this Jacksonville team then need to do to keep alive the playoff dream here in terms of winning this football game on Sunday? What do they have to do particularly well?
I think it's the play of the quarterback, David Garrard. You know, he can be very good at times. He can do things that a lot of quarterbacks can't do just because he can extend the play kind of like a Ben Roethlisberger. But at the same time, you got to be able to do it at crunch time. And he did it in three games this year. And then in the last two games against Miami and then against the Indianapolis Colts, he had opportunities with the ball in his hands, and for whatever reason, they didn't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And any time you go against a great quarterback, whether it be Peyton or Tom and even Phillip Rivers, and you've got to include him in the conversation this year. But you have to be able to make big plays at the quarterback position because the other team's just going to put points on the board.
Sure.
So David's got to be able to do that. They're not talented enough to where he can sit back in the pocket and be the classic pocket passer and throw to a Randy Moss or, you know, a great receiver, because I don't think he has a true great receiver. So he has to be able to do a little bit of the impromptu and create things with his legs and with his arm, and he's got to be sharp.
Do you feel like that, you know, if this team falls short of the playoffs, that this season has been largely a disappointment? Should it be viewed that way?
No, I don't. The only disappointing thing with this, I guess you could say, Jacksonville franchise has just been, I would say, the attendance here this
yeah,
year.
Right,
you know,
right.
As far as the production on the field, the production's been fantastic. The job that Gene Smith has done in being bold, you know, I guess you could say, in going after a young roster and, as he calls it, having vision for the future, I think was outstanding. And the job that the coaching staff has done with a very young roster is outstanding. Disappointment-wise, you know, just one game on television so far, or for the entire year, because the home schedule is done. And obviously that's something that, you know, this market and this franchise is, you know, wants to correct.
Sure. I have to admit that, you know, when you know, that seems to be one of the overriding stories that seems to keep popping up, is the fact that, you know, the fans aren't turning out in Jacksonville. And so, you know, I ask you, where do you feel the future of this franchise really lies? Will it stay with local ownership, and will local ownership, if ownership change, would it keep it in Jacksonville? Has the city done enough to keep this team?
Well, I hope so, you know, because for the early years, you know, when I was a part of this team, it was outstanding. I think second to none. You know, I played in New York, which is one of the biggest market.
I think Patriots fans will remember that, Jeff, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, even though as big as that market was, it didn't come close to the electricity that Jacksonville produced in its early years.
Right.
So, I mean, this team is clearly, it is football frenzy when the time is right. With the economy, and this is a small market, it has a lot of challenges,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Green Bay, obviously, being the smallest market, but, I mean, Green Bay's got history behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got generation after generation of people that grew up with that franchise and with that team, and it's going to take the same type of thing here where this market needs to grow up with it, and then they may have to do some things, creative things, whether it be, you know, playing in London or playing in Orlando to take some pressure off of the fan base here. You know, whatever it takes, you know, I'd hate to see this team leave here, because I think sometimes when you do that, you never really build any history. You know, much like what you've got with the Ravens and what went on with Cleveland and Tennessee, and then you got the new Texans franchise. I mean,
right.
I'm old school. You know, I like the Patriots, you know, that have been in Foxborough, New England area for their entire existence. You know, I like the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think that does something for a franchise, and when they have success and they've got history behind them, then people just fall in love with it, and they become fanatics, and they come.
Well, as you suggested, Jeff, obviously your career began getting drafted out of the University of Virginia. I remember watching the draft that day, in fact, when you got called as the choice of the Jets, and the Jets fans gave it up to you. I mean, they just...
You know, I send a Christmas card to Mel Kiper.
Do you now?
No, I don't.
That's funny. I mean, yep. Obviously, it's all proof is in the pudding. You spent 10 years in the NFL, so I it's pretty hard to go against the kind of career that you had. And I know that there are probably 1,000 guys that wish they had the career that you had during that time. But I wonder, do you ever look back on that and look back on it anything but fondly?
No. I mean, you know, it was an amazing run, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it was a great experience in that, you know, I got to spend 6 years in New York, and boy, what a change of lifestyle that was for me, having grown up in, you know, suburban/rural Virginia.
Yeah.
And you just can't ever replace those kinds of experiences, and then the ability to come down here to an expansion team, to experience a newness and to kind of reinvigorate my career and my emotions and excitement toward the game. I mean, it was... Well, couldn't have written it any better.
If I'm not mistaken, your last game was when you tore a muscle in your arm or you tore something.
At Chicago.
Do you ever look back on that and wonder what might have happened had you not gotten hurt?
Yeah, sometimes. But, you know, I always look back at that play and think, boy, I wish Edgar Bennett didn't run with such a leg kick. Cause I reached out to tackle him, and he was kind of like a Roger Craig kind of runner.
Yeah.
And he kicked his leg out when he went to cut back behind me, and I stuck my arm out, and it just popped my bicep tendon right off the bone. But, you know, that didn't end the career. You know, I think it was just a compilation of injuries. I mean, I had herniated disc in my neck, C5-6, you know, reconstructed knee. I've got a reconstructed shoulder. I had a problem with my left shoulder, which was an AC resection where they had to cut the end of my collarbone off. I had a tear in my capsule in my shoulder. I had microfracture procedure on a knee. I had an umbilical hernia.
Wow.
You know, I mean, so the list goes on, and those are the ones that required surgery, and there were many others that didn't. And, you know, after 10 years of that and going to the repair shop every offseason, that gets old.
And yet it was worth it.
Yeah, I would do it again. Isn't that crazy?
Well, no, because I understand that mindset. I really do. I mean, I understand that. I just and I don't mean to get off topic here, but obviously there's a huge issue now, the Players Association, with what to do with the retired players and the pension fund and everything. Where do you stand in all this, and how much should the NFL and the NFLPA help retired players, not only like you, but those who are worse off than you?
Well, I think they've got to. I think they've got to try to, you know, at the very least, the biggest thing that I would like to see the retired players get is some type of opportunity to purchase health insurance, you know, because that's the number one expense. I think that, you know, the post-playing career days kind of will hold for those players and guys like me. You know, one of these days they're going to be sitting there going, boy, you know, I made some pretty decent money, and, you know, not everybody makes big money, you know, so when they need something fixed or they've got issues health-wise down the road because of something related when they played the game, I think they should be able to have the ability to get help in that area.
Right.
You know, and as far as, you know, the pension, you know, the money being paid out every year, you know, hey, look, they you do make good money while you're in, and if you take care of it, you can certainly help set yourself up for life. But I think the ability to get health insurance post-playing career in a group plan or something of that nature would help and go a long way towards solving a lot of the needs.
Jeff, sure appreciate your thoughts today. Thank you so much for spending the time, and hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday and safe travels up this way this weekend.
John, I appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Jeff Loggeman, again, who's on the Jaguars Radio Network with their play-by-play man, Brian Sexton, and obviously a 10-year NFL veteran, as we talked about. He spent his last 4 years of his career as a player with the then expansion Jaguars after starting his career with the New York Jets. And I know that Patriots fans recall his time with the Jets probably more significantly than they will his time with Jacksonville. But good to have him in the playbook today. Do we want to jump into the locker room stuff now, Doc? I think that, you know, because we did promise that we were going to do that. And the reason we didn't mention about Jeff before the game, before the show started today, is because, quite frankly, we've been playing phone tag with him, I think, and just never been able to nail him down. All of a sudden, bang, he calls, and we're glad to put him on. So good to get some insight on the Jaguars, because, again, it's one of those teams that, you know, whether it's market size or whether it's just because it's in a different part of the country, obviously it's in a different division, but, you know, you want to know a little bit more than maybe, than maybe the other guys, simply because we get so focused on the big teams. And, you know, by that, I mean, you know, the Colts and the divisional opponents and such. And this is a huge game. This is important for both teams on Sunday. Patriots need it to clinch the division. Jaguars need it to stay alive for a potential postseason spot. So it's got a lot of stuff to it. A lot of stuff to it. All right, let's go into the locker room again for the Patriots from earlier today, and you will get a chance to hear from Patriots center Dan Copen, wide receiver Wes Welker, and defensive end Jarvis Green.
Copen. Come in here, and obviously it's later in the week, so not a good time to really take off, but I'm sure we'll have some time with our family and, you know, get a chance to see them Christmas morning, which is the big thing. But, you know, there's a game this week, and that's the most important thing.
It's all business here, isn't it? I mean,
you know, in December, it's, you know, it's sort of got to be. You know, it's, you know, one of the things where, you know, your families understand, you know, we're here to do a job. And unfortunately, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas sort of fall into, the, you know, the end of the season. So it's something to deal with, and, you know, there'll be a lot of Christmases afterwards.
Yeah, and they seem to close up the middle a bunch. How did you, does that put more pressure on you, and how do you guys handle that?
You know, I think everybody's, you know, really responsible for who they have. Everybody's just you done like? Yeah, you know, everybody's responsible for their own guy, and, you know, seeing every look and seeing what they can do. Obviously, you know, they can do a lot of different things, and they have done a lot of different things, and you know, pressure is one of them. So we got to be ready for that.
Dan, talk about being one game away from one of your goals of the season, which is win the division. If you guys win this week, you guys clinch.
No, it's a big game. You know, we put ourselves in a good position, and, you know, hopefully we can carry it out and, you know, really accomplish one of the things we wanted to at the start of the season. But, you know, playing Jacksonville, you just look at them. They're a good team. They're a good defense, and we're going to have our work cut out for us.
How do you gear up for teams that physical?
What's that?
How do you gear up for, can you gear up for teams that physical?
No, they're definitely, you know, a big physical, you know, front, and they got a lot of linebackers that can run and, you know, really do a good job of filling the holes where they need it. So, you know, you just got to get out there and play. You know, you can't start off slow. You got to, you know, get into the game fast and, you know, make sure you're ready to go from the start.
How much do they change between the 4-3 and the 3-4?
You know, really as much as they want. You know, they got guys that can, you know, that's something that we haven't seen out of Jacksonville in the past. You know, new defensive coordinator bringing it in, and you know, looks like it's been working for them. They got a lot of big guys that they can, you know, stick in there and step up the middle. So, you know, really, you know, they can call whatever they want at any time, and those guys, you know, seem like they respond pretty well.
Welker.
Game away, clinch here. One of the goals of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, anytime you get an opportunity to clinch, you know, the division is a key thing. So we definitely need to come out there and play some good football.
You don't mention that on Friday you'll probably get, you know, maybe an hour to celebrate Christmas, but you're back and you're working. You're used to that, I would think.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I don't feel like I've really had a Christmas for a long time, since high school almost. So it's nothing new for us. And you know, we just kind of roll with it and try and have some quality time with the family and then move on and get back to work.
Wes, Tom talked about how this team is still trying to establish its identity on offense. Do you agree with that?
I think so. You know, we look real good at times and we struggle at times. So, you know, we just need to continue to work hard and make sure that, you know, we're trying to develop ourselves and get better on a daily basis and really start to come together and make it all work.
What do you see from Jacksonville on film defensively?
You know, they got a lot of good players, especially those two guys in the interior linemen. Obviously, present a lot of problems for us. And you know, they got Mathis back there, who's been a great corner for a long time. And they also got some rookies that are playing really well for them. And as the season goes along, you know, playing a lot better. So they present a lot of problems. So we got to make sure we can't get, you know, too careful with them and make sure that, you know, we're not getting, I forget what the word I'm looking for, but can't get careless with them and make sure that, you know, we're taking care of business.
What has made them punt cover?
They got a lot of good players. A lot of guys who are really getting around to the football and you know, they defeat double teams. They, you know, do whatever they have to do, and they swarm to the ball, and they're really fast and athletic, and you know, they definitely present a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Wes, a couple of years ago, you guys were going for an undefeated record. Now the Colts are back. Do you recall the last couple of games? Was it just business as usual here? Did you not pay attention to the overall record?
Of other people?
No, of yourself. You're 14-0. You know, oh, we got to go 16-0. Did that ever?
When
ever
in 2007?
Yeah.
And I don't know. 2007 was a long time ago. So, you know, we're just worried about 2009 and worried about the Jacksonville game and just moving on towards it.
Can you talk, Wes, about the opportunity to clinch the division with the win on Sunday?
Yeah. You know, obviously it's very important in making sure that, you know, we, you know, take care of business and have a good opportunity to do that. And hopefully get out there and take care of business. All right. Thanks, guys.
Travis Green.
Big game for you guys.
Yes, big game. Jacksonville. Nice game. And we know what's in front of us, and we know it's going to be a tough game. We out here to try to go and win football games.
So thank you guys again. I had to practice on Christmas Day. You still have time for the family after,
yeah.
But talk about practice on Christmas Day.
I mean, we did it before. I mean, a lot of times we used to travel on Christmas Day, so it's nothing new. I mean, it's work, you know. It's football, you know. It's part of the environment. We're going to be here for 3.5 hours, so. I don't know what time we're coming in yet, but hopefully it's later, so I have time to open up gifts for my kids.
What do you have to do differently than a mobile quarterback?
But we got to really, the rushing, I mean, it's different than playing a Peyton Manning. You know, he knows he's going to scramble. So he has the opportunity, too, so you got to just really be disciplined in your rush lanes, contain.
Is he any more dangerous than he's been in the past?
I mean, I remember the past he had a lot more touchdowns. I mean, what he got, I don't know what he got this year, but I mean, still, he's a threat. You know, he's like that next receiver, the third running back in the backfield. So, I mean, he's very dangerous in the things that he do.
You guys have added more Springs and more Sanders recently in the past 2 weeks. Has that helped a little bit solidify things as far as experience?
Oh, yeah.
Past 2 weeks, Springs and Sanders have come into the lineup, played a ton. Mm-hmm. Has that settled things down a little bit for like the unit as a whole?
I think we've just been communicating more. We've been having a lot more meetings with attention to details and some little things, and that's really been helping.
Jarvis, this team is supposedly has a physical reputation. What have you seen lately with that amount of help?
I mean, they're balanced on what they do, but they have a, you know, great running back in Drew. The guys who watched is very physical against the run. They have some big linemen up front, so that's something that we got to really, you know, hunker down and just play, because it's going to be a 60-minute game with that, and that's their bread and butter. I mean, Drew has 15 touchdowns, lead the league, so he's been doing something right.
Jarvis Green at the end there. Again, Dan Copen, Wes Welker, and Jarvis Green in the locker room earlier today. And I'm going to leave you with one final email here. This one comes from Chase in Florida, who says, everyone just needs to take a chill pill. Change three plays, and this team is 12-2. When you lose unexpected games, everyone gets their underpants all ruffled and panics and searches for why it's happening. This team's defense in terms of points per game is identical to 2007, and they've lost four games by less than a touchdown. The NFL playoffs are more like the NCAA tournament than the NBA playoffs, so I would not be surprised if they went to the Super Bowl. When you lose, your weaknesses are magnified, but winning makes them go away and cures all. Winning always takes a little luck, and sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. Hey, I thought I had a patent on that one. I always say it's better to be lucky than good. So anyway, Chase says the identity for this team is unlucky. All right, well, consider that for a couple of moments. Belo, get off your cell phone.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah, what's up?
You checking your messages?
Maybe. It's personal in nature.
It's kind of a big deal.
Okay. I guess so. I mean, wow, you know, he's in high demand over here.
Well, you know, to squeeze in my time for 4 to 5 for the Fantasy Lowdown is...
It's kind of tough to do.
You really got to book me well in advance. And then to do 3:55 to 4 with you, I mean, you know, my agent's really got to book that well in advance.
I'm very happy that you've acquiesced and, you know...
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, exactly. So, is this the final Fantasy Lowdown?
I believe it is. This is the final, the finale of the Fantasy Lowdown for 2009, our second year just about in the books. But it's been a heck of a year, and got a lot to get to. I mean, we're still churning. We got a lot of our listeners in the finals of the leagues.
Nice.
Got some intriguing storylines as those people set their lineups for this week, and the fun never ends. Maybe we'll even take a peek at some of the sleepers for 2010. Maybe we'll even
really
do that
already.
Today. Sure.
We're gonna look ahead.
Well, here's the thing: in fantasy football, much like in the NFL. You know, actually more so in fantasy football than the NFL. More than 50%, probably more like 90% of fantasy football owners and fantasy football fanatics are done. You know?
Yeah.
You think about, you know, the fans
you
of the St. Louis
postseason.
Rams.
Right, right.
Fans of the Rams and Lions and Buccaneers, they're looking at 2010, so why shouldn't fantasy owners, you know?
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
There you go.
So you'll be a fan of the St. Louis Rams for a while and look ahead to 2010.
That's what we'll do. Or the
maybe like you should look ahead to 2013 while you're at it.
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll talk about some of those high school athletes in the, around the country right now who are going to be fantasy studs in 2017.
What's on the docket for the holidays in the low household?
You know, we got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, celebrated Hanukkah, so was
good
able to take care of that recently. And, you know, still have a chance for some festivities this weekend and take advantage of 2 days off in a row, which is rare in football. Not that there's any complaints there, but, you know, Friday and a Saturday off. Is not a bad thing. So we'll take advantage of that and enjoy that and then come raring to go and see if the Patriots can wrap up an AFC East title on Sunday.
Outstanding. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I'm sure that your listeners are waiting for everything you have to say, so I'm going to bug out of here.
They've been waiting.
And we'll let you at it.
They've been waiting for a while. Happy holidays to you, John.
Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah,
thank
bud.
You.
All
thank
right.
you very much.
Belo and the Fantasy Lowdown coming up here in a couple of moments. And that's going to wrap up the playbook, at least for the pre-Christmas version. We're very, very grateful for each and every one of you and the time that you take in spending with us during the course of the week. And hopefully we've helped, if not entertain you, inform you, enlighten you, enrage you, whatever it may be. That's what we're here to do. So we'll wish you happy holidays. Hope it's a safe and a peaceful and a prosperous holiday for you. And then we'll come back to you inside the playbook next week prior to the New Year's holiday. Someone's guest hosting on Tuesday. I don't know who it is.
Neither do I.
I think it's Brian Lowe. Brian Lowe's coming in next Tuesday. So Belo may be in the chair.
We've got Belo at least for an hour. I got to figure out the first hour.
Okay, Belo is because I'll be traveling, so I apologize for that in advance. But I will be with you next Wednesday from the College Football Hall of Fame in South Bend, Indiana. How about that? You like that? I'm going to be there. That's where I'm going to be. And yeah, we might even sneak a little college football talk in next week before we talk about the Houston Texans. All right?
I'll be thinking about you.
I'm
see
sure
you next
will.
Year.
Yeah, you'll be skiing, right? You'll be on a slope somewhere. Happy New Year.
You too.
All right. Happy holidays, everybody. We'll talk again next week. We have the Pats and the Jags this Sunday. Next week at same Pats time, same Pats channel.